All right, so we will call this meeting to order. Thank you all for being here on a beautiful day. We're going to start out by having the Water Planning Advisory Group members introduce themselves, just so we all know who each other are. And for the benefit of Bruce Wichen, who will be doing the notes based on the recording. So it will be helpful for him to have that as well. I will go ahead and call you all off so we're not all speaking at once. Just say your name and what group you're representing. And then I will get to the members of the public, which I don't see many members of the public here now, but I'll start with myself. My name is Alicia Charmett. I represent the fisheries segment, and I am the Secretary of the Fisheries Advisory Council and the Executive Director of Rivers Alliance. Josh, why don't you go next?
I'm Josh Kansler with the Southeastern Connecticut Water Authority, and I represent small utilities, and I'm the other co-chair.
Jonathan? Avery?
Jonathan Avery for Hazardville and Jewett City Water Companies, and we are small, privately owned water companies.
I'm going to skip over Virginia right now because I see you're eating. Karen?
Karen Bernasca, Save the Sound. I'm representing Watershed Land.
John Hudak?
Hi, John Hudak with the Regional Water Authority. And I'm representing regional water companies.
Pat Kearney.
Hi, Pat Kearney. I represent municipal water companies.
One of these days I'll get your name right, Pat. Sorry.
Fred Think Klein. Of Nebraska.
Okay. Nebraska.
Kearney, Nebraska.
Okay. I'll look that up after the meeting. Fred Klein.
Fred Klein, Pullman and Comley. Representing the Connecticut Power and Energy Society on behalf of the energy industry, coming to you from Marlboro, Connecticut.
Sean?
My name is Sean Hayden, and I'm with the Lake Warmog Task Force, and I represent the quiet waters of Connecticut.
Dave? Go ahead.
Dave Kosminski, Town of Portland.
Virginia, I'll come back to you because it looks like you're
Virginia DeLima, retired from the U.S. Geological Survey, representing academia, science, water, rivers, ecology, et cetera.
Allie
Hibbert, Connecticut Deep.
Corinne
Fitting, Connecticut Deep.
Martha?
Martha Smith, I'm the West River Watershed Coalition from New Haven. Also, I'm the alternate for rivers and watersheds.
Denise?
Hi, I'm Denise Savageau. I'm the president of the Connecticut Association of Conservation District, and I'm also the chair of the Connecticut Council on Soil and Water Conservation, which is a state agency.
Dan?
Hello, Dan Lawrence from Aquarian Water. I'm representing large privates.
Amy? Amy is still putting away dishes. Gail?
Hi, Gail Lukina Pura.
Chair Bukowski?
Good afternoon. Jack Bukowski, Chairman of the Water Planning Council. Nice to be with everybody this afternoon.
Amy?
Hi, Amy Petras, Farmington River Watershed, and I'm the alternate for the, what's the group name?
Water Resources Protection.
So, joining you today. Thank you.
Eric?
Hi, Eric Hammerling with the Connecticut Forest and Park Association. On the recreation group.
Ingrid.
Hi, Ingrid Jacobs with Aquarion, alternate for Aquarion.
Tom?
Tom Tower with the Metropolitan District. I'm the wastewater representative.
And I believe, who else did I miss that are members of the group? Oh, Margaret, sorry. There you are, Margaret.
Yep, sorry. I'm here.
That would be Margaret Miner, who is representing Rivers Alliance. And is there anyone, any other members of the group that I'm missing? And I'll have
Alicia, this is Mike Emmons. Can you hear me all right?
Oh, Mike, yes, sorry.
That's okay. I'm just wondering why my picture of me is coming up, but not my face. But I'll figure it out. But I'm Mike Emmons, the category business and industry water intensive business and representing Connecticut Nursery and Landscape Association.
Did you try clicking on the little camera that's in the corner? If there's a cross over it, you don't have your camera.
Which
on.
Corner?
If you move the mouse around down in the corner where you say mute.
Yes.
There's a little video camera. If you click on that, it might bring your camera up. Either okay. That or there's something wrong with your camera. There you go. Hi, Mike.
Oh, I'm in. Okay, great. There I am.
There you go. Anybody else that I missed?
Hi, this is Joanna Rogalski. I'm here for Aaron Boudris, who wasn't able to make it today, but we're representing the Councils of Government.
Great. Thanks, Joanna. Anyone else that I missed? And then I'll have the members of the public introduce themselves. All right, Judy, let's start with you, if you would like to introduce yourself.
Sure. This is Judy Allen, and I'm with Save Our Water Connecticut.
Peter, are you representing a member of the public today, or are you an alternate for someone?
I am myself, a member of the public. Thank you. Peter Gallant.
Kelsey?
Okay, safe and healthy, yes, thank you.
Also, hi, I'm Kelsey, the river steward at Connecticut River Conservancy, just listening in.
Sarah?
Sarah Ridgeard from Connecticut Water.
Ah, that's right. I'm sorry. You're an alternate for someone, aren't you? No?
I don't think I am.
Okay. Okay, that's fine, though. Hi.
I mean, you tell me if I am, I guess.
If you want, but... let's see. Iris? Did I have you dropped off already? Iris,
yes,
I know.
Could
oh, there you are, Iris.
Yeah, Iris Kaminsky. I am from New Haven. I am the board member of our Environmental Advisory Council, and I'm representing the public.
Gail, did I get to you?
Yes, you did.
Okay, and did I get to you, Ingrid?
Yes, you did.
Okay. All right. Did I miss anyone? All right. So then let's get started. I just want to start out with asking everyone that's not speaking to put yourself on mute so we don't have a lot of background noise. You can find the mute button. If you wave your cursor around, it should be on the bottom right-hand side. And I believe on the phone, you just have to use your own phone's mute button. So we're going to start with the approval of the minutes from July 21st. Does anybody have any comments, edits, or changes to those minutes?
This is Fred, and I have a comment. In the discussion on reporting of drought actions, I had suggested that drought conditions are more location-specific and that statewide reporting fails to provide an accurate picture of actual conditions. And I think that, we should have a goal of trying to have a more granular approach to the reporting.
Okay, I'm going to make a note of that for Bruce in the meeting recording to take note of that in the minutes.
Thank you.
Sure, anything else? Anything else? So hearing no other comments, changes, or edits, I'm going to again make a note for Bruce to incorporate Fred's comments into the minutes. And I'd like someone to make a motion to accept the minutes with Fred's comments incorporated?
So moved.
Virginia beat you to it, Karen. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, so that was, the motion was made by Karen, seconded by Fred, with competition from someone else that I didn't get. And all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed?
Mike Evans will abstain. I did not attend last week.
But Dan Warren side abstained as well.
Okay, that's with abstention. Oops, who was that?
John Hudek will also abstain.
Okay.
And okay. Joanna Rogalski also abstaining.
Okay, so the motion carries with abstentions from John Hudak, Mike Emmons, Joanna Rogalski, and Dan Lawrence, again, for the benefit of Bruce, who is taking the minutes. All right, so we will now move on to the Water Planning Council update, an update from the implementation work group. Take it away, Virginia.
Okay, well, this group met immediately prior to this meeting, and one of the things that we discussed was that having the implementation work group and the advisory group meetings back to back in a virtual environment is deadly. When we were meeting in person, it made sense to couple them, but to have as much as 4 hours straight of Zoom calls just certainly doesn't work for me. So we talked about the possibility of moving the day and or the time. I have just sent out a poll, an email to the members of the implementation work group, asking them if they could meet at 1:30 on the second Tuesdays of the month. And when I hear back from that, I will certainly let you all know if that's going to be the change, because there are a number of you who attend both meetings. And so hopefully I'll hear back from people within a day or so, and we can make that change if it's something that the members of the group can actually make. So be looking for that, and I'll get that out through you, Alicia and Josh, if we're going to be making that change. So in terms of the content of the group, that the group discussed, as you all know, the Alliance for Water Efficiency, Marianne Dickinson, is working with us in terms of implementation. The primary thing that was of importance to the implementation work group was looking at revenue stability if industries were to implement a water efficiency rate. And so we are planning a rates workshop sometime next spring to be discussing that. There will be a case study of a particular industry. The Regional Water Authority has volunteered to be a case study, and we're hoping to also include a municipal in that analysis of how you can make it work financially. The date of that meeting will have to change. We had some discussion. It was currently scheduled for March, and we had some discussion of whether we should postpone it a little bit just to get further along the COVID recovery, if you will, or whether we should start planning to do it virtually. That decision has been put off temporarily so that we can see what's going on in the next couple of months vis-a-vis the virus and decide whether we do need to revamp it to be a virtual workshop rather than a day-long workshop. Another topic that they're looking at is possible changes to Connecticut laws and regulations. The two items that came to the top of the list, top of the priority list, were looking at plumbing fixtures and looking at water loss. And so the Alliance for Water Efficiency is digging into those more deeply and using examples from other states of what might be possible if we were to recommend that we implement some changes to our laws and regulations. In terms of the reports from the topical sub-work groups, we heard from the drought group is finished reviewing the notes from the 2016-2017 drought in Fairfield County and are beginning writing their report. They're hoping to complete that this fall. This group was asked for input to the white paper produced by the Domestic Well Group, and we got two sets of comments, which the group is going to be taking a look at and incorporating as appropriate. Also, the Water Quality Domestic Well Group is going out for inviting various participants to work with that. We had quite a bit of discussion of how we should solicit participants, whether we should do it based as we currently have been with small groups, identifying key people, perhaps they identify a few more key people, or whether we should put it out to the entire water universe to get people who we might have missed otherwise. Clearly, the advantage of that is we might get different perspectives that the small groups hadn't thought of. The disadvantage is that it could quickly become unwieldy. So that was something that was debated. We will, at a minimum, have on the website descriptions of these groups, and so people who have seen it on the website and are express an interest certainly would be welcome to contact us and express their interest and join a group. So that the Domestic Well Water Quality Group is looking to have its first meeting sometime in late September. We did start up what was originally called Marketing and Outreach Topical Subgroup. They have chosen, with our blessing, to change their name to focus more on education and outreach. They have already met, and they've identified that they really have two distinct audiences. One are sort of, if you want to consider them the more official ones, government agencies, business, NGOs, who really should be learning more about the state water plan. And then the other audience is the general public, and perhaps a need to educate there. So they are looking at those different two different audiences and identifying some perhaps creative partners or people to include. They're looking at COGS, CACI work. They're looking at potential teacher training things, AARP, League of Women Voters. And so they're really thinking very broadly. They obviously, throughout this whole thing, will be looking at how it coordinates with the WOOCs, because as those of you who attended the Water Planning Council meeting, I guess 6 weeks ago now, remember that there was some concern about whether some of our work groups were duplicating efforts in the WOOCs. The new regionalization and interconnections topical subgroup, again, you may recall that the Water Planning Council requested that we expand that focus to not just be source water or water sources, water or suppliers, but also wastewater. Dave Radke has revamped that proposal, which we will be resubmitting to the Water Planning Council and for their next meeting, which is scheduled for September 1st. And I believe that's a summary. Those of you who attended the meeting, was there anything that I overlooked that you feel should be mentioned to this group? Okay. And I'll tell you that I have another Zoom call at 2:00, so I am going to be signing off this call early.
Before Virginia zooms off, does anybody have any questions for her about the report? All right. The next thing on the agenda is other water planning, state water plan matters. The Water Planning Council did not meet earlier this month, so unless I'm missing something, I don't believe we have anything for this on the agenda, unless somebody has, from the group, has something under this item. All right, so let's move on to the Water Utility Coordinating Committee update. Dan, will you be giving that report?
Sure, I can do that. The Eastern WOOC and the Western WOOC have met. Excuse me while I get myself organized. The Central WOOC
right now, with Dave Ratka stepping down and retiring, is still looking to replace the chairs. So that's kind of a little bit in limbo, excuse me. So the intention right now moving forward is to create, for implementation purposes of the WIC recommendations in Table 12-1, is to create a group, subgroups out of the three WICs, much like in the way the state water plan is going to do as well, to implement recommendations. So the intention is to have a group call probably in September at this point. Those interested in being involved from the WIC side on implementing recommendations and coming up with various solutions. Again, working in concert with the state water plan, much like we're trying to all work together and not fight about how to get there, but just get there. So that's really where we're going. So anybody have any questions? I know Margaret was on also.
Yes, I mean, I could add something, two things.
Sure.
One is that I really liked policy. Is there an echo? I really liked the policy work you were doing. The second is there were three items for new connections, new water sources. And I think it was not you, Dan, but maybe another member of the WIC. First of all, the WIC meeting was very small, which is something that's always been a matter of concern. You know, are there going to be one or two people making these decisions? Well, at least we had some good one or two people, so maybe it's not a problem. What one of the members asked that I was watching is this really working to slow the proliferation of small systems, because three came in and were approved. The two of them were in West Cornwall, and was understandable that there was no hookup nearby and pretty much would be developing their own systems. And Dan, maybe you can clarify. I'm not quite clear when a new system becomes a satellite system of the, and this was an open ESA, so that may make a difference. But at any rate, they weren't satellite systems. They became separate systems. And then the other one was more challenging because it was downstate. Where, what was it, where there's the 165-foot hookup down?
Yeah, you can go through all three, Margaret, if you want, just quickly. So right. We did have three situations come before. The Western WIC one was a affordable housing development in Canaan, which was miles from any other system and millions of dollars away. We're essentially, I think, about 16 units. So that moved forward just because of the economics around that particular situation. There was one in West Cornwall, had a very similar scenario. In terms of distance, we did ask them to look at trying to connect to, and I did that for, Canaan as well. I asked them to look at and talk to the school and look at how far and provide that information. In West Cornwall, there's all transient non-communities. That's a restaurant request. Adjacent owners did not have sufficient water to consolidate the groups together. So they have some challenges, a very tight site. But we did approve that there is no community system anywhere nearby.
Right. And then we had the reason, is the reason that they weren't satellite systems? What was the reason they were not satellite systems?
Well, those will be standalone systems.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there was one in Aquarian service territory. I believe it's in Monroe that we're referring to, where we're working with the Department of Public Health and the developer on trying to extend 165 feet of main to connect. But it's a gas station, you know, not a lot of high usage. So we've provided some information to the Department of Public Health, Eric, a few others, based on some costs that would be incurred, to see whether we can convince the applicant not to create another water system. That is one of the big pieces that I think the WIC's going to take away is, as Eric, about re-looking at the calculation. There is a calculation that can be done. but you know, normally it's not that close when we're looking at these. When you're a mile away, it doesn't matter what calculation you're doing. I think if you're 165 feet, so that's one of the things that in the WOC recommendations and implementation we want to take a look at and see if we can find a way to make it clearer. I think one of the bigger challenges, and we've had this in the past as Aquarian and in my previous days as a consultant, you know, there's a lot of sometimes political pressure put on when you try to force someone to do something. Margaret, we had similar conversations about something else recently where not necessarily, you know, it's like, well, why are you impacting that person's business? Why should they have to spend more money, right, to implement their business? Whether it's the first selectman who wants that development to happen or it goes to the state level. So definitely need some cleanup in terms of a process. But right now, I think decisions are being made individually. Most of them are easy because they're very far away from any community system. But the ones that are within 200 feet, those are the ones that really make you wonder, how can we not get this done? But I'm cheaper for them to put a well and a small pressure tank in than it is to
put 160. Since I have an echo, I'll be very quick, and I'm going to retune in. At least I think I have an echo. So my questions were, if the new system, the new public system, is within 165 feet of an existing, and in your ESA, and with 165 feet, I thought the purpose of the WOC law was to require either you to hook up or them to hook up to you. If the new project can just say, no, we don't want to, it's too expensive, and the water company can say, no, the client, you know, the customer has to pay for it, we don't, what is, you know, that to me, that seems like a problem with the WOCs, and can it be addressed? And I think you're talking about a formula of some sort. And second, I said, please look at the statute regarding changing ESAs. And changing the maps, and do the statewide maps and your integrated plans have to be updated because you've changed an ESA? I have always found the statute very confusing on what you do when you're altering an ESA, bringing a new system into the ESA. So I just asked, as I have in the past, please take a look at that law. I don't think it's really working very well, and I think it appears in the law that there's probably way too much work to do according to the statute when you're changing ESAs. So I mean, I'm assuming these new companies are going to be ESAs within the ESA. Is that what they will be?
Well, Canaan and West Cornwall did not have a defined exclusive service area provider through the process. Both communities petitioned not to have that. And if you look at Board Baltimore, it makes sense. I don't think you'll see any more development.
So what about the Monroe? It's a general
You know, Aquarian or any water company or any municipality is not going to extend a water main and pay for a water main for a development project. It's considered cross-subsidization, right? Why would ratepayers pay for something new? I know towns at times, municipalities can bond things to extend water mains into industrial parks for the purposes of helping tax base. So that can be done. But Connecticut Water Company, Jewett City, Hazardville, Aquarian, and all the other privates cannot do that. The developer themselves would have to pay for and extend the main and related service.
So thank you. Just wanted to put a light on there may not be reduction in the proliferation of small systems as automatically as one might have expected with the WOC law. I think that was my observation.
Yeah, that's your point, and it is a difficult scenario unless we, you know, but it's something we need to endeavor to work on and figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is right now.
Okay, thanks. That was my observation.
This is Fred. I have a comment. I represent some developers, and you know, they face a lot of costs when they do a development. And one of the significant costs is having to develop sources of supply and then potentially interconnect with the local utility and meet all of those requirements, which in many cases winds up being a very significant economic cost to a developer. And in some cases, the sources of supply that they put into their property are then used by the local water company to provide water to other water company customers outside of the development. And I think that we need to take economic and development, economic development considerations into effect when we do all of this discussion. Clearly, water quality is important. Clearly, getting diversion permits and all of the necessary permits are important. And protecting water supplies is important. But I think we also need to consider the impact on economic development as we look into these issues.
Agreed.
Any other comments, questions?
This is just Dan, just to comment on Fred's response. I would agree, and that's, it's one of the challenging points, Fred, right? I mean, if you're building an enormous development or a small development, obviously your financials are different as they look at their return on investment. And we don't want to hinder economic development within the state of Connecticut. So there's an interesting challenge to put forth with the competing interests that we don't want to continue to have small systems adjacent to community systems. But how do we get that done? I think there's some work to be done.
Just to add my two cents, it's interesting that we've kind of taken this, looking at that in the instance of water, that a bigger system is better than smaller systems. And although I'm very happy with Aquarian and all the work they're doing, it is in a way, but we're looking at some other systems where we've had to go back and rethink about what we're doing. And that has to do with stormwater. Stormwater, it was like, oh, let's put big systems in, and now we're looking at low impact development and everybody holding their stormwater on site. We're looking at, you know, with from a farming perspective, doing all the farming, you know, in some areas of the country, and now we're looking at local foods and how do we do that. So we're looking at decentralizing a lot of our systems. So I'm not saying that it's not right to have that as a goal, but I think it is something we need to look at when we centralize a system. We're doing that with energy. Should we decentralize? Should we do distributed generation? So there's a lot of emphasis right now on that. So, and we even do that with, you know, sewage treatment plants. It's one thing to put in as many, you know, sewage treatment plants. They're appropriate in some areas, but we maintain septic systems for a reason. So I appreciate the difficulty of that DPH has in terms of working with folks and making sure these systems work and are up to speed and do what they need to do. So I think there's a challenge here, but there's also, you know, does a centralized system work better for water utility? And I'm just putting that out there as a question. I don't know, and I don't know if we've looked at it from that perspective. So as we're having this discussion that Margaret brought up, I just wanted to bring that up, that we're finding challenges with major centralized systems. There's no redundancy. If something goes down, everything goes down. Like I said, water utilities, we don't tend to have that we have with electric, but we don't have that with the food supply either until it's a major issue. So I'm just putting it out there that it may be something we need to discuss a little bit further before we just.
So there's a proposal going to the Water Planning Council for their September meeting to approve a work group to look at that, exactly what you're talking about. What are our goals in Connecticut and what exactly do we want for our processes for a number of community systems, and so that's a work group in process to be approved.
If I could make a comment, yes, the other aspect, and I think Margaret Meyer has posed this, and this has to do with standards. So making sure that the design standards for small systems are upgraded and are appropriate. So those of us who have taken over small systems of the past, one of the challenges is that the standards were usually quite poor. And we are actually, in replacing these small systems, having to put the burden on other customers of basically designing the system appropriately with things like backup power and having properly sized storage facilities and having proper materials. So those are areas of design which we've noticed in the past have been, it's all about getting whatever's cheap and whatever we can get by the local planning and zoning. And so if the standards are appropriate and they have proper design, these small systems can work fine. The problem is when they're not designed properly.
Yeah, and I mean, and one of the discussions is just because a water utility takes it over doesn't mean it's still not operating as a small system, kind of decentralized. A lot of times they still are. It's just that now we have a larger utility managing them. But there's that tendency to say, like, oh, if this isn't working right, do we put in a pipeline? So that's where I think we have to have that bigger discussion you're talking about, Alicia.
Let me just add, personally, I feel that the heavy emphasis on centralization and as large as possible utilities may have been a mistake. I'm just was pointing out that appeared to be DPH's goal to reduce the number of small companies. And are we actually going in that direction or not? That's my question. There's a lot to be said for decentralization, I think. Now I'm back on mute.
Okay. Anything else on the WUC? All right. Under B, COVID-19 issues for water-related agencies and other entities, I propose we take this as a standing issue off the agenda. I think we're all sort of, Mother Nature's throwing other crazy stuff at us, and that almost makes it feel like COVID is old news. So unless anybody has anything on this, I'm going to take it off the agenda as a regular item, unless anybody objects and thinks we need to keep it. All right. Now, I'm very excited about the Interagency Drought Workgroup update. And I do actually, based on your comments earlier, Fred, about really getting more granular with the data, I don't know if you've gone to the Interagency Drought Workgroup website recently, but their most recent presentations actually get very granular. Well, they at least get they present conditions by county in the presentations that are now given to the interagency work group. And I have to say, I looked through everything today, and I'm so impressed with the amount of information that is available now when the interagency work group meets. So you might want to take a look at that, because I think they're doing a much better job of going through and breaking everything down into regions. But I will let Corinne give that update, unless I don't believe DPH has joined us. So go ahead, Corinne.
You're right, Alicia. We are looking much more granularly, and we've got some great input because the National Weather Service people are on the calls, and USGS are on the calls. So we're really getting some really good information. We met last Thursday. We're meeting again this Thursday. And you know, the conditions have been really mixed. They've been changing. The northwest corner was really dry, but then the storm brought in a little bit of rain for them. The central part of the state is pretty dry right now. All of the short-term indicators are steadily drying. We were hoping for a little rain this weekend. We got a tiny amount in some parts of the state. But there are parts of the state that have, you know, 7 and 8 inch deficits. Let's see, in addition, we've got a number of large municipal systems, like Southington in New Britain and Bristol, Waterbury, Manchester, who are approaching their drought triggers, but they're not quite there. And so because, you know, just taking everything into consideration, we held at stage one last week, and we will reassess and continue to collect information for this week. We're just keeping a very close eye on it, but the decision was to stay at that first below normal condition for now.
Just out of curiosity, who was it that put that nifty chart together of the different stages by county? That was
That's Bruce Witchen and Eric Lindquist are the key people that are gathering all the information. Each of the agencies and the Weather Service and USGS are feeding information in at least 24 hours, but sometimes 48 hours before the next meeting, so that they can compile everything and we can go through the indicators. A lot of we have these short-term indicators like fire danger and crop moisture or soil moisture rather. And then we have these longer-term, you know, 3 months below normal precipitation, for example. And the short-term, you know, are pretty dry, but those longer terms, we've only had 2 months of below normal precipitation, for example. So we're looking at the indicators and trying to make sense of that sort of balance.
Just trying to bring up the hand up. They're taking too long to load. But yeah, it's much easier. It seems like a much more process-oriented process for determining where either statewide or regionally each region is on drought.
Yeah,
very much appreciated.
We're looking at developing some graphics that we can put up on the website by county and just sort of some general infographics about where we are in the drought and what the indicators are. So more to come.
Does anybody have any questions for Corinne?
Not a question, just a comment. Based on the work of the drought, the implementation work group and the drought sub work group, Corinne mentioned these trigger levels, and that is something that's probably going to come out as a recommendation. It's something we talked a lot about in the drought work group, and they're all over the place in terms of how people have their trigger levels and what they should be using. And I know as we did the analysis of the last drought and heard from Aquarion, they really changed the way that they look at the drought, the trigger levels. So I just wanted to bring that up, that's something that is being looked at by that drought subcommittee.
Yeah, this is Fred, and I am on the site, and I do appreciate, for example, I'm looking at the surface reservoir capacity measurements and trends. The latest one I see is July 22, and it does show by public water system the current status, or at least the then current status, and the percentage of normal. I am just wondering whether or not, Alicia, if there's another area within that website that I should be looking for the granular approach that I was referring to. But I do find that the surface water capacity summary report is much more granular, and I very much appreciate it.
Did you look at the handouts for the last meeting? There are two handouts, handouts one and handouts two. Hold on, let me share my screen so I can show you where it is. I've gone too far. Hold on one second. Just back out of here. Nope, there it is. All right. Okay, so this is the Interagency Drought Workgroup webpage. So this is where the information is as far as what stage everything is at. For the 8/13/2020 meeting, there is handout one and handout two. That's where you'll find that really granular data. There's 30 pages in handout one.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm looking at them now. I appreciate it.
Sure. There. Okay.
Thanks.
Any other questions, comments? All right. Wow. Okay. So we got an update on the Alliance for Water Efficiency work with Virginia's update. And since Virginia isn't here, I think she's had to drop off. Unless anybody has any questions or comments on that, we're going to move to the Watershed Lands Work Group report. All right. Margaret and Karen.
So Karen, you start, of course.
Well, there's two topics that we would like to discuss under the Watershed Lands Work Group. They both revolve around the conveyance of land. I think Margaret's going to get more into the specifics of the actual conveyance that was approved at the special session last summer at Cheshire. What I would like to do is go over just briefly. I hope you've had a chance to look at the email on the draft addendum to the CGA land conveyance questionnaire. What Margaret and I are asking today is that the advisory group approve and send this questionnaire to the Water Planning Council for their approval, their support, and to request them to send it to the chairs and the ranking members of the GAE committee so that committee can review it and hopefully get it in process and have additional questions in addition to their existing questionnaire for any possible land conveyance requests that may come before them next legislative session. So this
questionnaire was sent out just for everybody. This questionnaire was sent out what, months ago, and with input, they asked for input from members, and that input has been incorporated into the questionnaire that was sent out earlier this week, correct?
The questionnaire that was sent out yesterday is has much of the many of the requests that people had submitted to us, and we are very appreciative of all the people who submitted comments to us. And it is, as we say, an addendum. We are not changing the CGA's existing questionnaire. We would like to add this to it specifically to get information on any parcel of land being requested for conveyance that may have a detrimental effect on drinking water. So this is it. We're sticking basically with the same format. We know that, as I said in the email, several people commented on the CT Echo, the viewer, and the information that can be found on there. That's great. We want them to look at that. We've had, great comments, and we've had comments from DEEP. You know, if there are concerns with a proper information not have been received prior to past conveyances, then maybe all the existing questionnaires should be reviewed before any and conveyance land is placed on the bill. So we have incorporated almost all of them. What we have said, we have not incorporated everything. I mean, there is really only the major question was, is did we want to ask the yes and no questions and ask for maps, just ask for maps, if so, which ones? So this is a draft that we hope to go like the Water Planning Council, who would have the ultimate say over what they would like to send to the GAE committee. But we very much would like it sent in hopes that they could put the Water Planning Council could put it on its agenda for their September 1 meeting. Then forward it on to the legislative leaders for their review prior to next session.
So can I hear a motion to approve this addendum to the questionnaire?
So moved. You can tell it. I think it's as good as it's going to get, and we need to get it up to the Water Planning Council, who may want to do something different.
So Margaret has made the motion to approve this addendum to the questionnaire to go to the Water Planning Council for their approval. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure. Well, hold on. Let's hold out for the discussion, and then so John Hudak seconded, and now we'll have a discussion.
Okay. Thank you. My suggestion is, you've got these documents. If someone just picks them up, they don't really know what they're all about. You know, I'm looking at the conveyance questionnaire, Connecticut General Assembly conveyance questionnaire. I think that there should be some sort of an introduction saying what the document's all about, pursuant to, and provide some background into the law. You know, this questionnaire is for the purpose of conveying state lands, da 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 da, or something, so that when someone picks this piece of paper up, they know what they're looking at.
Yes, I agree, but we anticipated that would come later. I mean, that's basically a cover letter, or it could be included in the documents. But at this moment, we want to be sure the Water Planning Council approves the questions to be sent forward to GAE. At that point, and it might be different audiences, but certainly we hope that the letter will come from the Water Planning Council and will be a cover letter. And GAE probably needs less of an explanation than the general public, if it goes to the general public, because they have heard this request for several years, variations on this request. So I just, I agree that it can't be just sent out this way, but this is the core of the changes we're asking for. The cover letter might vary according to whom it will go, but I would love to just be sure we have our core issue correct.
Yeah, this is Dan Lawrence. I do think, I mean, I understand what you're saying, Margaret, but it would be nice if there was some at least short preface, because it's not clear that it's just related to conveyance of land related to state property.
Right.
Would you consider making a approval condition upon Karen and I writing at least a cover email or a cover letter to the Water Planning Council when we send it over?
What I tried to do for at least, I'm sorry, what I tried to do for the group was to put some background information in the email. We really cannot change. We can put something more on our draft, but what if you're looking at what says, I don't know if Fred was referring to this, Connecticut General Assembly Conveyance Questionnaire. That is what's on the CGA's questionnaire. We did not add anything to the two pages that say CGA questionnaire. That's what exists. That's one of the reasons we are looking at an addendum to it. And if you would like, I have no problem in saying this is for, you know, state land, but we are not redoing their questionnaire. We would just like an addendum to that to get some more environmental information.
No, I mean, I'm looking just as add a couple sentences just to clarify what the addendum is supposed to be related to. instead of having to explain it, just so it's clear. I agree with Fred. If someone picks it up,
I could perhaps draft a couple of sentences before the meeting is over. These are sentences that would be like what we would say to the Water Planning Council and what the Water Planning Council might say. In other words, about three sentences.
Yeah, we're not looking for pages.
So the problem that has arisen is that conveyance questionnaires do not include information as to whether water resources are involved in this conveyance or not. The purpose of the addendum is to add information to the basic questionnaire that legislators who want a conveyance have to fill out, to add information relating to any water resources that are on the property that might be affected by this conveyance.
So for clarification, the second page, which is what we're approving, we're not approving the first page.
Correct.
So we're not approving the document dated 2019. That's existing.
Yeah, no.
We're just approving
that incorporated into it.
Yeah. So what we're asking at this time is for that these are the questions that the Water Planning Council will approve. And once they approve them, then we can incorporate them into the document and provide the General Assembly with a completed document at that time with these in either as an addendum and or incorporated into their document. Is that correct?
Yes, that would be good. I've wondered if they could be, you know, if when they're incorporated, they're in boldface or, you know, the usual legislative language. But yes, that's correct, Denise.
And the one thing about something like this type of a form, having worked in land use regulations, is a lot of times this form is something that says, you know, there may be all of this other information, and they're saying you need to do this, 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 and fill out this conveyance form, and they call it a very specific name. So that's why you don't put everything in there. So, for example, when I was working in land use in the town of Greenwich, we didn't put on the top of every form we were requesting information from everything that had to do with the planning and zoning process. We did that once and then said, and you have to fill out form A, B, C, D, and E. And so I wouldn't go changing their form. They know how they use it and how they want it done. So I would not propose that we limit ourselves to the way that they possibly use their document. So we're just, you know, incorporating. So I just wanted to point that out from a regulatory process.
Eric, you look like you had wanted to say something earlier, and I know you've been very involved in this. Is there something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that when we're talking about the need for a cover memo, the cover memo is for internal purposes within the Water Planning Council rather than a cover memo to the General Assembly. I just want to make sure that that's what we're talking about because, as already has been said, you know, this is the form that the GAE committee uses, at least the 2019 one, which we're not proposing to change. And it would just be a note eventually that would come from the Water Planning Council saying, you know, we would like the GAE, as you are asking members of the legislature to put forward potential land conveyances to collect this additional information on the water resources. And it's really that simple. But I just wanted to make sure, though, that as a follow-up, we're putting together the right information for you.
You are right, Eric. The email I did to send it to this group, what we hope we would do, and we can change that, is we would be sending the information, I think, that even Dan or even Fred had requested, would literally be from the advisory group going to the Water Planning Council. It would not be going to the, you know, General Assembly. It would be also then up to the Water Planning Council, hopefully, if they would approve it, to send it on to GAE and ask them, and with a little explanation. And that's why I gave them all the Cheshire explanation again. But a broader explanation that the Water Planning Council would submit with the draft addendum to the GAE committee. Our form was not, the wording was not meant to go to the General Assembly.
Fred and Dan, does that make sense now?
It helped to put it into context. I appreciate it. I'll have to write to my legislator and suggest that they change their form.
Yeah, I'm good at as long as there's some.
I'm sorry, Dan, I couldn't hear you. What did you say?
I'm good at, is there some connection to what its purpose was? You know, that's all.
Agreed.
So I don't think we have to change the motion, do we? I didn't write it down. Okay, good. Because I forgot. I was, of course, hoping for Bruce to write it all down word for word. But I will call for, if there, so all in favor, say aye.
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 Or give the thumbs up.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Are there any abstentions? All right. So we will be sending.
Alicia?
Yes.
Margaret and I will send you some revised wording so that you and Josh as co-chairs can officially forward it to the Water Planning Council.
Okay, great. So we will send that off to the Water Planning Council as soon as I get your wording along.
So I have a couple of items to report on the actual Cheshire conveyance.
Okay.
One is that Jonathan Steinberg has an interest in, he's very concerned about it and wonders if it should go forward. And I spoke also to Kevin Ryan, who is in leadership, and he's a legislator from the Montville part of the state. He's interested in water issues because half of his town, if you'll remember, is in that interesting extension up from Groton. And the other half of his district has very contaminated soils, and one of his high schools has been on bottled water. So he was very interested. He looked quite sober when I told him who the two co-sponsors were, but he asked to see the bill and the public act and, you know, the original bill. I'm not sure I said about it. He wanted to know what happened because, like most legislators, even though he's interested in water, he had no idea what was in this bill and never heard of it. So those are two more legislators, with Jonathan particularly interested in perhaps stopping or, you know, putting some strong conditions on this particular conveyance. So if I can corner more legislators, I'll just keep telling the same story. So I'll try to be working primarily with Jonathan, but I'm very interested to see what Kevin Ryan says.
Corinne, do you know if there's been a response from the town of Cheshire to the EUP's letter?
I'm sorry, I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's a question we can put to the Water Planning Council at the September meeting. Is there anything more on the Cheshire issue? If not, then I'm going to ask John to bring up. John, you're still here, right?
Yes.
All right. Should we ask Chair Bitkowski to cover his ears and sing la 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 la?
I'll just go get a glass of water.
Okay.
Okay. I assume you mean the nominating committee. So we've assembled our.
No. This was where I thought we would bring up the. The solar farm issue, because it's a watershed lands issue, right?
Right. Okay.
Okay.
So, you know, over the past couple of years, there's a topic of discussion for this group has been solar or renewable energy installations on water supply watershed lands. And a lot of the focus was on water company owned lands. And I and others pointed out that the water company lands do have another layer of regulation with the Department of Public Health and having to get permits. And what could happen is, you know, the guy next door to the water company land could clear cut a forest and put his solar installation in. And depending on the size, it may need local approval or it may need siting council approval, but no DPH approval. So our case study has actually arrived. We have the Lake Whitney public water supply reservoir in Hamden, and up in the upper watershed, a proposal is now before the Connecticut Siting Council. It's actually a petition from a company that wants to install a 1.9 megawatt solar installation on forested land that happens to be adjacent to water company land, our land. And it would involve clear cutting about 15 acres of watershed forest land. So just, you know, for informational purposes, you can go on the Siting Council's website. There is a petition there to basically, I want to use the right words. It's a declaratory ruling that the certificate of environmental compatibility and public need is not required for this project. So there is that they have an environmental site assessment online, and there's a couple of notifications to Bethany and Hamden shown there as well. And they're looking, they're suggesting that any comments be sent to the Siting Council by September 6th.
We can forward that information out to the rest of the group if you think it would be good for everyone to have it.
John,
anybody have any questions? Go ahead.
We do. I mean, typically the Siting Council, they have everything that they do is public. They notify neighbors of proposed projects. And I assume that Regional Water Authority was informed of the Siting Council application and is being given an opportunity to be heard.
Unless the letter's floating around the building and I haven't seen it, I don't think we have. Nevertheless, we're aware of the application, so we'll be discussing internally, obviously, and deciding, deciding about what our position is going to be.
Sure. As a representative of the energy industry, I'm very interested in learning more about this. So any information that you or anyone else can share, I would appreciate it.
Sure.
Thanks.
Just quickly, there's been a lot of discussion about the siting of solar panels on natural landscapes, particularly at the Governor's Council on Climate Change, and whether we should be cutting down forests, impacting wetlands and watercourses, et cetera, for solar installation, when we have a lot of real estate on rooftops and parking lots and other places to site these, and they tend to be looking at the cheapest way to go, which is not necessarily the cheapest when you do a real economic analysis and take in and start looking at the externalities and the other costs. So this is a big discussion that's happening. I think I'm hoping that there's going to be some policy changes. We're really pushing for that. And it's also a lot of times, impacts having a policy that is always looking at the cheapest way to go for installing solar has impacts on the most vulnerable communities, because then they never go into urban landscapes. And again, they just keep focusing on those rural landscapes. So we're really looking at that with another hat on, we really have been looking at how some of these installations have gone, and they haven't gone well. There's been a lot of erosion and problems with these installations across the state. And for those of you who don't know, the DEEP denied a permit for a solar installation primarily because they couldn't, they just weren't meeting the stormwater discharge regulations. So they're really taking a look at it. There's some very specific guidance that they've put out for the solar installations, and they're really taking a hard look at them. But as a policy from a state perspective, it really is something that needs to be looked at. So just making people aware that this is a major discussion. There already has been some changes to the law regarding farms and whatever, but it probably hasn't gone quite far enough, and we need to be vigilant on this. And particularly with source water protection, we don't have very strong source water protection laws in our state, and we need to really pay attention.
Martha, then Margaret.
Yeah, I was just going to say, John, if this is the same one I'm thinking of, I was given the impression that the neighbors are quite concerned about it because of, you know, erosion and flooding problems that they're already having. And the town of Hamden is not exactly thrilled with it either, but it's out of their hands.
Yeah, I know that the town officials and some of the neighbors are not happy with it.
And I'm just going to put one, my other two cents in from as a municipal official who has gone before the siting council, is they're not very friendly to interveners when the town, when someone says, oh, well, the towns can come in and comment. They do not like it. They are, it's unbelievable. They're like, oh my God, they filed to intervene a status, which they have the perfect right to do and should be part of the process. And let's just say they're not overly happy with that process. So whether it, but I would encourage the municipality and the water utility to file for intervener status as part of that public hearing.
Margaret, and then Gail. Margaret, you're still on mute. Hold on. Okay, you're
there
good.
Okay, am I good? Am I good? Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Margaret. You're
okay.
Good.
So there is a new law that I think may apply here, but it's very weak. It requires DEEP to have more of a sign-off on these projects. But basically, these projects are unregulated. DEEP was able to intervene. I think, Alicia, you were talking about the Candlewood Mountain case. And DEEP was able to intervene on the discharge permit, but not able to stop the project itself, which was recognized locally from the beginning as just a terrible place to put a solar array. And it's under some litigation. The real change we need is that all these power projects, they don't go through the normal siting council process that we're used to, and that happens for cell towers, which was much more communication with the community and chance for the community to observe and comment and maybe get some changes. Although I agree, the siting council is not a friendly place. But for these energy projects, it's almost a rubber stamp. They don't go through a normal certification. They do for a certificate of need and whatever, environmental compatibility. They get a petition. You don't need to do that. And so basically it's a fast track right past environmental considerations and even, I would say, environmental justice considerations, what's best for urban communities and so forth. So I think we need a change in that law. Solar projects should be treated the same as other siting council projects and receive more scrutiny and with more chance to intervene. It's not a permit. It's a declaration. You don't need a permit. So I think we'd have a lot of work to do in that area. And yes, it tends to be quite destructive of water resources when it could be helpful. So that's my observation on this terrible process.
Gail?
Well, in terms of unintended controversy, we just sold our house in the rogue land conveying town of Cheshire, and I was concerned about that. And behind me is the beautiful forest of Lake Whitney, where we're living in our condo until we decide where to buy another home. So I'm like, good grief, this is like the first I heard of it. So that's a problem. I wonder if my beautiful view will be a solar array. Oh my gosh, unbelievable. I guess I'll be getting more information on it. That's depressing.
Well, it isn't close to Lake Whitney, but it is on the watershed, so you probably won't view it from where you are.
Well, it's minor good news, but I'll still have to get involved. That's terrible.
Call your legislator.
Absolutely.
All right. Go ahead.
I just want to make one more point, is that DEP is involved. They are part of the Siting Council. And one of the challenges, they have a representative on the Siting Council, and whenever something comes to the Siting Council, even for a declaratory ruling, they don't send it to their people. So they don't have their people take a look at it, and so they need to be more involved. And again, their policy at the top needs to be looking at, is this the right way to go? So we did pass, again, some legislation that protects farms and forests, but it's probably not quite strong enough. But we really need to keep pushing that.
Okay. So is there anything else on this before we move on to the nominating committee? All right. Well, John, you just happen to be not on mute anymore from the last one. So why don't you go ahead?
That's right. I'll carry on. Sent out by Bruce this morning was a draft of our 2021 member slate. What our rules call for is submitting this to the Water Planning Council in October. So I would say we have another month, I would suggest we consider approving the slate or recommending the slate at our September meeting. For now, I would just like people to look over the information, especially the alternates. Are the alternates still active? If you don't have an alternate, consider appointing one. And also, some of the alternates, I don't have affiliations listed. So if you want to just look that over in the coming weeks and send any changes to me, I'd appreciate it. We have filled all the categories this time around. So we do not have any vacancies.
So, John, just to save an email, my alternate, Claire Kane, her name is spelled C-L-A-R-E, no I in it.
But C-L-A-R-E.
Enabled.
And she's with CFPA also?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Sean, is Kelsey with Lake Warramog as well?
Yeah, she still is my alternate.
Okay. Great. So all I have, no more questions.
We're not voting on that, right? We're just having everybody take a look at it and then voting at it in the next meeting.
Yeah, we'll save it for September.
Okay. All right, so under other new business, I know Margaret wanted to mention a conference. So Margaret, why don't you go ahead and mention that under other. And if you'll excuse me for a minute, I've got to take care of a quick family business here.
Okay, you all may have noticed my electrician in the back try to fix my office light. Brenda Watson. Who's one of us. Her national program is it's the water, energy, and utility affordability coalition. And once a year their program, which I think is called United We Stand, does an annual meeting. And a couple of the presentations, Brendan, I thought you all would like to see, and I have the I have a couple of PowerPoints, a PowerPoint and a PDF that I can send to you. It'll give you a sense of what's being talked about nationally. One program, one presentation was called New Programs to Address Water Affordability, and it focused on Philadelphia and Baltimore. And another one that we liked was Investigations into U.S. Water Poverty and Justice Issues. This is a national movement. I think we'd like to see what's happening, and what I can do is send you the presentations as I have them, and then Brenda, when she's on vacation this week, she can perhaps explain more about the group. But it happened just as we all clicked into 2 days of Zoom, at least picking some presentations, the power went out. So I hope you'll be interested in following up on this. Looking at the presentations and talking to Brenda.
Any questions for Margaret on that? All right, is there anything under new business that we missed?
Just a comment, Alicia, this is Karen. I just wanted to thank Dan Lawrence and DEEP for holding an informational session next on the 26th at 3 p.m. on the Aquarian Diversion application from going from Bridgeport into Southwest Connecticut. But I think there was a lot of questions on it, I know, down in Southwest Connecticut, and I thank Aquarian and DEEP. It's not a public hearing, it's just it's a public informational session. But I thank them for putting that on.
Right, that's for the Southwest Regional Pipeline increase in.
Yes, the increase in capacity of the pipeline, which involves the addition of more pipeline. So.
Okay, I will. When I send around the information about the solar, I'll send out that information as well.
Thanks.
Is there anything else for public comment? All right, so the next Water Planning Council meeting will be September 1st. And the our next Water Planning Advisory Group meeting will be September 15th. And I believe the Implementation Work Group is keeping their September 15th meeting for now until they make a determination as to when they're going to change their meetings to. So if there's nothing else, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
Is there a second? Who seconds? Okay. If there are no objections, then the meeting is adjourned. Thanks, folks, for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.